Well, let's talk about your restaurant Pulpera. Is that how you say it? Is that how am I saying it right? Pulpera?
It's Pulperia. Obviously,
Pulpera.
that's not putting that in a Latin, vigor into it. That's
Yeah.
still the way of saying it.
Okay. So
But
it, you opened that in 2020, in right in the middle of the pandemic, which is pretty
perfect.
gutsy thing to do.
I didn't know the well. Look, let's be honest. We've had all the other flus over the years, right? They sort of came and went, didn't they? Pig flu, bird flu, whatever. It never led to this, did it? So,
So you
what
just
system did that?
you didn't think it would go on, basically. So you
Well,
went
I
ahead.
never thought in my lifetime I'd ever see a situation where the country's shut down. I
Shocking.
mean, when Boris actually said it, we were watching it and I didn't believe it. I looked at the lads because we had Mother's Day a couple of days after. I said, so we still open for Mother's Day? Because I couldn't, like, my brain, it didn't compute. So the Andrew Frost, who's our operations director, is like, no, chef, this is it, we're done. I'm like, what, until what, next week? Or what? No, until they decide we reopen. I'm like, you can't close the country down. Like, you just did, chef. Like, serious. And my brain didn't make sense of it. So yeah, we opened, we're in Pulpera now. So we opened, we had 11 services before we got locked down.
Oh, wow. Gosh.
Yeah, so it was fun. So we did the best part of a ton of beef drying away in because we just opened, so we just loaded everything up and we were busy. We had circa 200, 220 covers in a day. That to nothing. And then we had a shitload of produce just sitting in the dry
What did
ages
you
and
do with it?
ate a lot of it. And
Drank a
yeah,
lot of it.
friends ate and drank a lot of it. But yeah, and I handed out to a lot of friends and family and the people in our team. It was basically just help yourselves, and
So let's talk about the restaurant and your service there. So you're celebrating beef. I believe you're a beef lover from your time in Argentina, which is what you said. It's quite funny you said that actually, because I'm a Hindu and I didn't have beef at all until my husband took me to Argentina and I fell in love with the beef there. And now I eat beef all the time. I can't believe that I wasted so many years not eating it. It was literally that's where my love for it began. So I'm guessing it's the same for you.
No, obviously I've always been
Always
a
eating.
fan of beef, but I think what I became a lover of is the lifestyle there, and having spent time there, a fair bit of time again, and just enjoyed their way of life. It just became part of me, I guess, and something that I wanted to invest in and something I wanted to continue enjoying. So obviously I can't bring the Pampas to Birmingham, but what I can do is bring the food, and that's exactly where what I did. But yeah, I think like in Argentina, like for me, a perfect day there is we in Mendoza, as a place we stay, where you ride horses all day and you're riding along and there's wild horses just running past. It's incredible. You come back, the empanadas in the oven, the parrilla's been lit, ready to bang some steaks, sausages, and stuff on. Oh, loads of red wine knocking around. What's not to love? What's not to love about that lifestyle? Obviously, if you're vegetarian. And so we actually, one of our mates who's a vegetarian went with us once to Argentina,
You
and
lose lots of weight.
I never felt sorry for someone as much as I did for him, because
It's not the place for vegetarians.
no, it was a difficult time for him, actually. So, one thing's for sure, in Argentina, if you love beef, that's the place to go, because that's where everyone loves it just as much as you do. So, but yeah, no, it's that's what it's built around, it's built around, yeah, my love of beef. So obviously not just Argentine beef. Obviously, I think we Brits, we're one of the best producers of beef worldwide. So we've got great examples of British beef. And then, something that I spent a lot of time in northern Spain, And I came across the tradition of chuleta, the tradition of eating older cows. Because obviously we normally, especially in the UK, two-year-old animals. In Argentina, it's a lot younger. So it's about, you know, just over 12 months. But you go into the other spectrum, like, you know, 14, 15, 16, 17 year, 18 year old animals, you know, all in the whole chuleta thing of, you know, the youngest probably about six to eight years. So it's a completely different product. You know, the meat is ruby red, obviously a lot of fat, but come along with that comes flavor, and then you've got the texture. And once I was introduced to that, I sort of fell in love with that as well. So pulperia, though it's built on an Argentine idea, and an idea I came up with when I was in Argentina, and the word pulperia is an Argentine word, to what it's become, you know, and it's become somewhere where you just get some great examples of beef. And we always do empanadas because my son loves empanadas. So, and I remember, you know, when he was young, he couldn't even say the word empanada. It used to be empanadas. And so that's one thing we always do is empanadas, just so he's got some when he to come.
Nice. And does your son is he interested in cooking? Does he take an interest in the business?
No interest in the business. He takes interest in eating. That's the thing. I mean, like, he really enjoys food. So
yeah,
every time he sees something on my profile on Insta or I put something up, he always, oh, what's that, Dad? Or, you know, since the age of six, you know, he's been eating, like, you know, like one of the things we have is, like, every couple of weeks we'll have a cheese afternoon, so we'll get some really nice examples of cheese. But it's something that he insists on. We always have to have truffle and we always have to have honey with it.
Oh, so, amazing. He's got good taste.
Yeah. Yeah, and so he's got a very sophisticated palate for a kid his age. So, like, on Monday, we've not had lobster for a while, so he wanted some lobster. So, because I used to own a lobster restaurant, so where on Monday we're having lobster. So it's really nice to see that in him. Is he interested in the business? Probably not, because I think his mother and I, we split in 2008, and a lot of it was based on what I was doing, which I was working so much.
Yeah.
And I think she's sort of like instilled that in him. Well, that industry equals no life.
Yeah. The loss of family life, and that will impact him in a big way, because obviously he feels that he probably didn't see you when you mentioned earlier on that when he was growing up, so probably remembers that, has that association with it
for sure. And I often apologize to him about it, and I say, look, you know, at the end of the day, you know, growing up I wasn't there, but I hope you understand why I did what I did.
Yeah.
But you know, as you're growing into a man, you know, I'm here for you, and we can do all these weird and wonderful things that, and you know, traveling around the world. And, you know, I think he's come to that stage where, you know, the mommy holidays are no longer cutting it. He's just come back from a holiday with his mom. And I said, how was it, son? And he's like, it was all right, Dad. And then, you know, sightseeing and, you know,
no truffle, no honey.
Yeah, you know, holidays with mum are slowly losing their charms. So yeah. You know, we've got a great relationship, and you know, it certainly revolves around, once again, love of food. And you know, I just love the fact that even though I've not been able to spend much time with him, the joy that food brings to my life, I've been able to at least pass that on.
Yeah, amazing. And so we talked a little bit about the pandemic earlier on. It was a struggle for everyone, but for you in particular, which I guess seems to be in your DNA, where you take a bad situation and make it work for you. So talk to us about Akhtar at home, because that was really, it was very spontaneous, but it was an amazing project because it created a lot of jobs for people from underprivileged backgrounds, servicing the community. So tell us about that, because you really put a spin on a really difficult situation.
Yeah, so the first lockdown, we enjoyed it, I'll be honest with you. It was the first time in my adult life where I've had a period of time of not actually having to do anything, which was a shock to the system. But once I got over the shock, it was quite novel. I thought, yeah, great. And then towards the end of it, sort of started to realize that it's not just me. Neil was one of my best mates, but also head chef at Ophim. We've been working together now about 15 years. and Andrew Frost. I think a moment came where we thought, sitting around like this, we can't do this forever. You know, we're wasting away. So we start doing just for fun, because what happened was, I'm sure you saw it. So everyone started baking fucking
sourdough bread.
And everyone started putting pictures of shit Sunday roasts up, right? And something that I'm passionate about is a Sunday roast. So we'll have it probably twice a week. So obviously on a Sunday, and because we love it so much, we'll have it another time of the week as well. So we love a roast dinner. So we thought, all right, all these shit roast dinners, I'm sick and tired of seeing it. I'll do 50 boxes of just roast dinners. And you know, people like my GP, Will, is also a great friend of mine, and Alex Quinlan, a few friends of mine. So all right, this is what I'm doing, guys. It's 50 quid, and this is how it's going to be, and it'll feed you and your family. So it wasn't really designed to make any money. It was just to keep us from drinking, give us something to do. And I'll tell you, we've got a massive dent in our wine cellar here at Paul Breer over that first lockdown between the three of us. I think a lot of it, it's nuts. But yeah, so we thought we can't carry this on. So that's what led to the boredom and trying to wean ourselves off alcohol. People just loved it. You know, people absolutely loved it. And then it became a thing, oh, would you do it again next week? It's like, I didn't really plan on doing it. Oh, please, would you? So we thought, all right, cool. So, and it just led from there. And then the weather was quite good, wasn't it?
Yeah.
First time. And I really enjoyed that. So people were barbecuing a lot. And they're saying, would you consider doing something Indian? So we thought we'd do a barbecue box. So loads of like Indian marinated meat. And that sold out in like seconds. So we did 50 again. It was all just 50. And then we carried that on for a few weeks, and then the restaurant reopened and we'd stopped it. And I think every week we're getting 400 or 500 emails asking for boxes, which Andrew was saying, thank you, really sorry, but you know, we did it for a bit of fun, but restaurants reopened and we're not doing it anymore. And then these kept coming through. So Andrew said, would you mind just doing 50 boxes a week again? I thought to myself, do I want to? No. And then he convinced me. And so I start doing enough for 50 boxes a week, just curries, because people were asking, they just wanted to eat trad curries by me. And we kept that going. So we're just doing 50. And then, and we, like I say, it wasn't a real business. It was just a little something we're doing just to keep those who are asking, you know, just to oblige. And then the second lockdown came, and we thought, okay, right. First lockdown, we chilled out, we had loads of fun. Now we're in winter, it's not very nice out there. Let's just do something. And so we start doing small amounts just to keep ourselves busy. And then we start hearing about a lot of people asking us, look, we've lost our jobs, because a lot of people didn't keep people on furlough, a lot of people, because they didn't want the employer's contribution. You know, a lot of people just let a lot of people go. So a few people who'd worked with me over the years, they'd come to me and said, look, we've lost our job. Is there anything for me? Can you help us out? So we just start taking on loads of people. And as we took people on, we expanded our capacity. And before you knew it, like I say, the team, there's like 26 people. And it just basically started from that, and it just went on from there. And then we start looking at local charities, because they were asking, because a lot of these local charities did rely on local businesses supporting them, but now these local businesses are no longer there. So where are these charities going to get from? So we decided, and so several hundred kilos, 400 or 500 kilos worth of food every week, we would produce and donate to these charities for, you know, struggling families and for the homeless and various other soup kitchens and stuff. And that's how it became. So it just spiraled out of that. And you know, it's just organically grown. And but the mantra has always been, you know, it's never there. It was never set up as a business. It was set up to basically help those involved, and you know, the guys who were knocking on our door asking for work.
Yeah.
You know, and then all of our team would have sat at home for 6 months on furlough, you know, but
yeah,
you know, and that they're fine. But it's all these other guys, they never had that opportunity, but they still had families to feed, they still had bills to pay. How do we help those? And you know, for me, like I said earlier on, investing in Birmingham is a massive thing for me, because I know, especially in the inner cities, there are seriously deprived communities that sadly they haven't been helped over the last 10, 15 years. And for me, it's important in my little way.
It's a big way. It's, you know, it's, don't undermine it. I mean, you're well known for putting back into your community. And I think that, you know, similarly, what happened to you when you were a kid and you were growing up, you know that putting young people into work kind of puts them down a better stead, right, into a better path, and yeah, do a lot for your community.
And that's the thing. So apart from the chef team, and these chefs are people I've worked with over the years who, you know, lost their jobs and, you know, they needed help, all the guys on the customer service and the packing team and logistics team, it's basically their first job. And a lot of them have been people who've been knocking on doors for work for a long time, but because of their appearance or for whatever reason,
yeah,
they've never been able to get their foot in to
in the door
to any place to get a job. And but they, one thing they want to work,
yeah.
And so they're great, you know, they're a young team, and they love what they do, and they're just, you know, walking down and look around, and I think, fucking hell, fantastic, you know, fair play, you know, well done. Like, you know, Aaron, who's only 24, who's one of the managers there, it was his first job, one of those kids where no one had ever given him an opportunity, but he had been looking for work for several years, but he's just never been able to get a job, but he's a lovely guy. And he's doing a fantastic job. So, yeah, so it's important. So, you know, even now, like, I just spoke to my ops director last night, and obviously we've got our customers, you know, they're great. And, you know, everyone comes from different backgrounds financially, right? So, obviously for a product, for, you know, people who support our brand, maybe from, you know, maybe more comfortable or you know, whatever. So, but everyone knows someone who's struggling. Everyone knows someone who could do with a helping hand. So I spoke to Frost yesterday and said, look, let's look at our capacity and let's ask our guests and our customers from our home if they know of anyone who's in trouble, if they know of anyone who needs help. You know, the only way we can help is with food, but if we can send them a box of food to see them through the week and their family, then that's what we can do. So we're just putting all the bits in place for us to go out to ask our customers and ask our guests if they know of anyone that needs help that we can help. And that's basically what we're putting into place from next week. Because you know, Actor at Home, it's you know, Ophim's my business. Ophim pays for my lifestyle, pays for my livelihood. And that's that. Actor at Home is, you know, it was never designed for me to retire on.
It's more of a community service type thing. But on a more personal level, how did you find the recipe creation for Akhtar at Home? It's a totally different ball game to what you do at the restaurant.
That was really easy because we're just cooking traditional Indian food. And we're just cooking it like I know to, and I've seen it to be cooked, and that's that. So the only struggle came is how do you
package it?
Well, packaging took us a long time to get right, and we finally got it right because it's just an absolute nightmare. But it's how do you, you know, bulk it up without losing that magic, you know, and you know, it's finding the right batch sizing and stuff like that. So that was the bit that was tricky, but you know, the recipes are there, you know, I've got a wealth of recipes in my head. You know, traditional Indian food, it's in my head. I've grew up with it my whole life. So,
yeah,
you know, it's not hard to pull those out,
okay.
But that became tricky. You know, how do you make it in larger amounts without losing that magic?
Yeah.
But, yeah.
And how do you do that?
Well, I think I found there's always a sweet spot. Depending on different proteins, different ingredients, you can take a batch size to a certain amount before it gets to a stage where the product deteriorates, or the quality, or it loses its essence, you know, of what it's supposed to be. And it really just boils down to, you know, what protein you're cooking with, what vegetable you're cooking with, and there's only so far you can take. Like lentils is something that's great. You can bulk up and do massive amounts.
Yeah,
that's great. You know, rice, and I can cook up to like 40 kilos in one go, and it all cooks great. But there are things like chicken you need to cook in smaller batches. Fish, even smaller. You know, certain root vegetables you can cook in larger batches, but then other vegetables like cauliflower and stuff like that, you can't. So it's about understanding that, really. Mm. I'm finding that sweet spot.
And you are, I hear, moving into hotel industry, or just expanding into that sort of business. Tell us about that.
Well, that's something I've parked now for a bit, but Afim, the building that it's in, the rest of it was supposed to be turned into a hotel. So I was going to put 40 rooms in there, you know, a really high standard, almost similar sort of look and feel to what we've got at the restaurant. But then once again, it's the pandemic that stopped that. So we've got the planning and everything approved a few weeks before the pandemic hit. And at that point, obviously, it made me look at it again completely and then decide what I'm going to do. And at that point, I think for Summer Row and for Birmingham, I've pulled out of that idea. But yeah. I have a couple of other projects that I had a catch up with a friend of mine who's involved in it, where there's two hotels that, you know, I'm potentially involved with, and there's one in Edinburgh as well. But they've started, you know, putting the foundations out. They can't get anyone to finish the project because no contractor will price. And no one will commit to time limits because they can't get the labor. So right. It's almost like in limbo at the moment. So it's been parked and left to the side. And we've got another project in Edgbaston where a property had been developed. It's ready. Now I've spent a bit of time and money getting it ready to shell, but we've had to park that as well because I can open another restaurant, but who's going to cook there? Look after the guests, because our industry, we don't have the
staff. I know.
We don't have the labor. We don't have the, you know, we can't. We just don't have it. We don't have, you know. Recently, I read an article about London. What, you know, how it's got quite aggressive and into poaching and stuff like that. You know, so if we're in an environment like that, it would seem the stupidest thing I could do is go and open another restaurant. You're right. Everyone can be taught, but you know, the people who need to learn, they can't make up more than 10% of your team. You know, everyone else has to be oven ready. And that's the thing. So, you know, the government's line of, yeah, train and invest in training. And of course, you know, I was trained by someone. So the industry has always done that. And we're not an industry where we've put barriers to entry. I mean, one of the great things about bloody hospitality is anyone can get a bloody job in hospitality. That's always been the case. That's why, you know, scoundrels like me and, you know, we've found a career in it, you know. But so, you know, that mantra that we hear from the government, yeah, you know, make it more accessible, make it more, you know, and invest in training, great. But that's always happened.
That is, or yeah, it has always happened. And yeah. You've got training facilities in Birmingham, is that right?
No, that's something that we've got. Obviously, UCB, which is right next door to us, one of the biggest catering colleges in the country. So I do a lot of work with them.
Okay.
But one thing I was looking at doing, that was another business plan that I had, was setting up a college, a cookery school. But
yeah, that's what I heard. Yeah, I did hear that you were thinking of doing that. So it's just something that's on hold for the same reason, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, because, you know, I might run two classes a week there, but I'll need someone else to see the students through the rest of the week, you know, and I need a team of people to do that. Is there a team of people to do that at the moment? Probably not. And that's the thing, it's such a shame, this whole situation. And, you know, I know COVID's got a lot to contribute to the problem that we're in today, but, you know, for our industry, it started with Brexit, and it started then. And I know, you know, people outside of the industry probably wouldn't agree with us, or because they didn't live it. But the weeks leading up to, you know, was it December 2019? Yeah, 2019. Yeah, leading up to that, we our suppliers are telling us, guys, this is going to get really difficult. Be ready. And then I had a lot of team members. I had one kid, Mikey, that I invested a lot of time working with him, and he's an incredibly talented chef. But, you know, he's just one of many who said, well, I don't really want to be in a country. I'm not welcome. So these are people that we'd trained and people that we'd invested in, but because they didn't feel welcome in our country, they've left. He's not working in his home country. He's just working across Europe, but that could have been us. So our industry, from there on, it was almost like started, the trouble started. And then obviously COVID was quite a few more nails into the coffin. I mean, we're not closed yet, but it's a tough life.
Yeah, well, I imagine you in particular put a spin on everything anyway and just make a really bad situation good and shine the light on it. So I don't doubt that, you know, Ophim would still do swimmingly well. How's business now that we've opened up and we're back?
Yeah, I think since we've reopened, it's been great. You know, we've had a great run of things. Obviously, we're going into challenging times again. Very interesting times as well. So it'll be. I was talking to my chefs and talking to like me and the ops director. We were chatting last night. It's like we're just gonna have to be as nimble-footed as we've ever been. You know, because we're gonna, you know, from week to week, things are gonna change. We don't know where this situation's gonna go.
Yeah,
we don't. And so we need to be in a position where we can react or preempt situations and find a solution before, you know, we have to take drastic action. So it's a case of understanding, like, you know, I think one of the worst things that any businesses can do is when you almost bury your head in the sand and think, I know it's shit, but it's going to go away. That's not what you want to be doing right now. Right now, you need to be, like, I always say, like a bloody meerkat, you know, up there looking around, seeing what's going on, and be ready to move.
Yeah.
Because I said it to the guys, I was like, COVID, in a sense, everything was put into stasis. So providing you had enough in the bank to cover your overheads, to pay your landlord and everything else, you could just reopen the following day. Or when things were released, as we all have done. But this situation we're in today, it's completely different. Because, you know, you're being squeezed financially, you know, as a business, you know, taxation, we've never experienced levels of taxation like this ever in our lifetime. And I'm 42, so I've never, and it's never been as bad as this. And then the cost of produce, just operating costs, everything just gone through the roof.
Yeah.
But you also have to respect the fact that you can't generally just pass the cost on like our suppliers are, because customers have a choice whether they come and eat at yours or not. But they don't have a choice whether they want food to eat at home. So if they want to go to Tesco and buy a bit of chicken and a loaf of bread, that's a necessity. Spending 250 quid on a tasting menu on a wine flight, that's not a necessity. So we need to understand that. So, you know, when the response that you get, well, we'll put your prices up. Well, you can't just put your prices up.
Okay, so you're not putting your prices up at all, or?
No, right now we haven't.
Right.
Right now we haven't, because, you know, one of the great things about my business is we're a debt-free business.
Mm-hmm.
So basically everything we take, it's ours to reinvest back in the business. And that's why I've been where I've been able to.
Yeah.
You know, earlier on this year, do a refurb on the lounge, you know, best part $300,000, and the furniture is only 2 years old, but we gave it away to friends and family and stuff like that. But, you know, that's why we've been in that position. So we need to, well, I'm going to, my attempt's going to be to, you know, it's going to be a fair transaction. When it comes to a point where it's going to be painful for the business and put the business in a difficult position, but at that point, I will have to react. But until then, I will do everything I can to mitigate those costs where possible. And one of the great things is obviously, because we, the suppliers that we work with, the volumes that we buy in between all the businesses, it puts you in a better position because, you know, suppliers look at you and think, all right, you know, we'll price these guys by the ton as opposed to by the kilo. Mm-hmm. So yes, they might not make as much as us in, you know, per kilo, but they're still, our contract is worth something to them. So you leverage that as long as you can.
Yeah. And, you know, even when you do pass on the, I guess, that the cost to the customer, your demographic changes. I don't think you'll have, you know, less clientele. It's just the demographic of the type of people that come to the restaurant changes.
Yeah, but something that's important for me is based on the background I'm from, and the people that in my social circle and people that I know and love, is all my businesses, I want them to be for everyone. You know, accessibility and approachability are two of the core ideals for my business. I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be elitist because that's not me. I'm just another guy, you know, I'm just your normal
but you
guy.
You do have accessibility in a restaurant like Pulperia and in Akhtar at Home. You know, you still do have, you know, different demographics there.
But I want a theme. I want people to be from any background to be able to come and enjoy that as well. And I don't want it to take it to a stage where, you know, it becomes painful to people because I don't want to do that. Because, you know, I've in the trade in Birmingham, there are actually, you know, non-starred restaurants that charge more for a tasting menu than we do.
Yeah.
Now I know I can bump my price up and I can say, well, you know, with us, you get 16 courses. It's all the best produce and we're a starred restaurant. But I prefer not to. And so, you know, is this enough for me to pay my team a great salary, pay all my overheads and keep the lights on? Yes, it is.
Okay.
That's it.
And but you do still have options though. You've got you don't have just that full tasting 16 course menu. You've got like a 7 course and a 5 course. Is that right?
We do a 5 course or a 10 course. So the 5 course we have on weekdays. Mm-hmm. We offer on Wednesdays and Thursdays, and then we're alongside the 10. And then at lunchtime on Friday and Saturday lunch, we do a 3 course a la carte.
Right. So there you go. You've got all your options. Yeah. You're covering everyone.
Yeah, well, that's what it is with all my businesses. It's always been like that because I believe in accessibility. I don't believe in exclusion because at one time that the person being excluded could have been me. You know, and that's how I always live my life. You know. No one, and I don't believe I'm better than anyone. I don't believe anyone's better. I believe people are different and beautiful in their own right, but nothing should ever be done that prejudices anybody in any way. And that's why, like with my businesses, they are the way they are.
Yeah. And that's why you're so likable and you're very, very approachable. So, you know, obviously your business is doing well because I think you sell yourself so well.
Yeah, I think that mantra runs through everyone in the business. You know, we come in, we know it works hard because that's work. You know, if it was all fun and games, you don't get paid for it. You sit at home playing your computer games. Well, some people do get paid for that, bastards. But but whilst we're here, let's enjoy ourselves and let's just be kind to each other. And yeah. When I say be kind to, it doesn't mean like, you know, no one's ever pulled aside or, you know, there is discipline is required, but ultimately everyone, and you know, we have like a family feel within our business, and the same approach then ends up with our guests as well. You know, we all of our team are encouraged to be relaxed with our guests. You know, formalities sort of leave them at the door because Ophim's my home. Yeah. I spend more time there than I do at home. So that's my home. So if my guests have come to my home, I don't want them to be formal. Same with Paul Pereira. That's how I look at it. You know, it's like I'll often walk over to the table, have a chat with them, whatever. You know, all my team, you'll see them having a chat with customers and building up great relationships and building up great friendships. Yeah. That's how I want it to be.
And earlier on, you mentioned that it's, you know, really interesting time. It is actually because you've also just done, you've been a judge on GBM. In 2011, you won for your fish course. How does it feel, you know, when you look back on things like that, how does that make you feel?
You know, when I first went into the Great British Menu Kitchen, so a few friends of mine, and these guys were star chefs, and they just said, look, just go in there, have fun. You're going to be up against some serious competition. They're going to be doing stuff that you'd never even thought of or working with ingredients you've never even heard of, but you just go and do you, man, and enjoy it, and that's that. And obviously I did, and you know, we ended up where we ended up, and it's you know, my relationship with Great British Menu has been fantastic. You know, I've made some really good friends through the process. Obviously winning it's fantastic, but I think it's the friendships that I've picked up along the way. So like Paul Ainsworth and Tom Kerridge. You know, Tom, yeah, he'd done a year before that, and he was, you know, he's already on his way to, you know, that rocket he's riding now. You know, he's already on it. But you know, for myself and Paul and Tom, he was still very earlier on in our you know, careers, or however you want to put it. And we became like really, really good friends through that process, and the people that I still speak to now. And it, you know, I remember when we, during the week judging, and the, you know, the wall that you walk past where all the judges and the veterans' pictures are. So I took a picture of me and Paul Ainsworth, and I sent it to Tom, and I was like, you know, in a boyish way, like, fuck, you know, we've come and taken over, sort of thing. You know, all the years back we were competitors, and now, you know, all three of us are in our own capacity.
It's awesome.
On the other end, yeah. And you know, so it's been a great day, and I really enjoyed doing it. I think judging's a lot easier than competing, I'll tell you that.
Definitely a lot more fun.
I mean, competing's a lot more fun because you're more on the edge, but you know what, I'll leave that
stressful for someone else. Stressful though, isn't it?
Sorry?
Very stressful competing.
Oh yeah, of course. But then in that there's some beauty in that, and some fun in that, and some joy in it. Mm-hmm. But you know, I think it's weird because my experience with GBM has always been as a competitor. So this time I almost felt a bit like I'm walking into the studio, I'm getting in the morning, and those, not anxiety, but you know, that feeling came back in. And then when I walked in, someone just said to me, oh, do you want tea or coffee? Instead of saying, all right, your ingredients are here.
Yeah.
Yeah, coffee, please. And I thought, fuck it, this is great. I'll never see you again, you know? And and obviously, being competitive before, you sort of understand what everyone's going through. Mm-hmm. So, and I think that really helped me judge as well, because I really understood everything that these guys are going through.
Yeah.
Not just with the equipment that's around them and what they're trying to deliver, but, you know, the feelings inside, because every single one of them would have prepped 3-4 months or longer after they received the brief about getting that menu right, and you come in with a lot of insecurities and stuff.
Mm.
So, you know, I try to make it very clear that it's a level playing field for everyone, and you know, it is about what you're going to put forward, and that's that. So, but yeah, it was fun, and you know, I met, you know, Ben Altwood, who's an incredible chef. You know, I met him. That was a great thing to come out of that. Sally, I knew from doing MasterChef and stuff from before. Mm-hmm. And then Liam, the local lad, I sort of knew him as well. So it's, you know, for me, it's nice around the people that you get to meet. But
yeah,
you know, ultimately, I think the nicest thing for me, Paul and Tom, or for me anyway, is the fact that three of us, if we remember where we all came from, and we're all, you know, if you look at Paul Ainsworth's pictures from back then, to him, he looks like such a cute little boy. we're all like 10 years older, or a little bit more than 10 years older now. It's just nice. And then
he still is really cute. He's one of the nicest lads, and I say this almost about. I mean, everyone in hospitality is just a gem, honestly. And I've had two podcasts with Paul now. And he really invests his time in whoever he's with. He gives you 100%. He's just lovely. One of the nicest people. Yeah, so lovely.
He's just so nice because obviously we still see each other and bump into each other at various things. So last time I saw him was at the banquet. And he just like, you'd run at each other, big hug. And same with Tom, you know, big hug. And it's just nice to catch up with everyone and have a little giggle about the stuff that we did all those years back. And he's nice, but yeah, Paul's lovely. Tom's an incredible human being, love him to bits as well, and just nothing but respect for both of those.
So you obviously love TV work, and you're a complete natural on the screen anyway, but how do you think you're going to be doing more TV? Is there something coming up in the pipeline that we don't know about yet?
No, I mean, it's, you know, it is something that I'd definitely welcome. I enjoy doing it. And it just really boils down to what the channels are working with formats. Obviously, the existing formats, you know, I've done a fair bit for MasterChef, no doubt I will continue to. Mm. And obviously GBM, you know, I think, you know, from the conversations I've had, no doubt you may, I don't want to give anything away, but you may see me on there again. But, you know, and other formats, yeah, you know, it's something that I'm welcome to, and these are discussions that we are having. And the thing about TV, though, for every 20, 30 conversation you have, you know, one may go through a little further down the line. Because right now, and based on the conversations I've had with everyone in TV, it's like no one's really sure like what the next format's going to be. You know, the whole cooking to camera, that's sort of gone. You know, the reality show side of things, that's sort of being, you know,
done.
That's owned by, yeah, and it's done and it's owned by MasterChef. You know, they own that. You know, that's sort of their look. The professional side of things, you've got GBM. So, but what's the next thing, you know? And that's I think that it's in that stage at the moment where people are, or the people in the creatives in TV are trying to work out what that next direction is going to be.
But yeah.
Once that happens, obviously, no doubt, you know, my hat's going to be in the ring. You know, I have several conversations with various production teams just to see what I'm up to and blah blah. Just basically keeping in touch. So no doubt, when things come up, pop up, you know, my hat's name's going to be in the hat and see what happens.
Cool. Well, good luck with that, Akhtar. Tell me something about yourself I couldn't possibly know.
Okay. All right. See, I'm quite a boring person, actually, because
you definitely are not.
I don't really have any quirks. That's the thing. Like, I'm, you know, if you know, even like activities outside of work. Yeah, I like horse riding, but don't get to do much of that around Birmingham. But my life is around hospitality. But I think it's something that, you know, a lot of people, like, I put a post a few weeks back, and people thought I was probably joking, where I had teddy bear's lunch, and it was a sandwich, he had crisps, and got his little
anyone who doesn't know, teddy bear is your dog.
Yeah, so he's one of my, so I've got two, I've got a Labrador and Teddy, but Teddy, Bailey, he's quite lazy, he just likes to chill on his trampoline in the garden, so he doesn't like coming into work, whereas Teddy comes in. So, so always do a pack lunch for him, depending on my day otherwise. But yeah, for both of them, I cook them, they have cooked meals throughout the day. So, and they have like a set menu that they work their way towards with different proteins and stuff.
Wow.
So
yeah, like
Neil, my head chef, he says, you know, when I die, I want to be reincarnated as one of your dogs.
Yeah, well, you know, being cooked for by Michelin starred chef every day, it's not bad life, is it?
Well, I mean, they do eat well, but I've got that thing. It's like, they're like my, you know, I know it's going to sound like really stupid, but they're like my kids, you know.
That's not stupid. That's a reality.
Yeah, I mean,
some family.
People take, some people take comments like that, you know, quite funny, but you know, for me it's like I don't see them any different, and you know, they're very much part of my life. So yeah, so that's yeah, that's probably, you know, one of the wins, because people just don't believe it. So when I put his packed lunch up, people, like, I got so many messages saying, are you serious? Is that, like, yeah. The other person, like Sabrina, you know, Sabrina Gale.
Yeah.
She's like, she just came back with, what about, what flavor Monster Munch does he like? Because she's like one of my, like, in our, in the trade, she's one of my best mates. I absolutely love her. And we had a debate about what flavor Monster Munch is. So no, whether he'd like pickled onion Monster Munch, that shit. Yeah, I don't know. So that's that. And then probably another thing, I've started to get over it now, is, over the last few years, is I've had a phobia of fruit. I don't know why.
Phobia of fruit?
Yeah, in its raw form. So, for example, not in its raw form. So if you threw an apple at me, I'd be fine. If you mushed an apple up and ran at me with it on your hand, I'd run for my life.
No way! Or, oh, my, you know, God, why?
I don't know, and my mother's never been able to explain it. Apparently, it started when I was about four, and it's just basically seen me through most of my adult life. And like, if you got a banana and just squelched it in your hand and then came at me with that, I'd be more scared of you doing that than if you ran at me with a knife, you know?
Oh my God.
I do not know what it is. So,
wow.
It's something that, because of the industry I'm in, that I had to find ways around it. But what I've realized is, if it's been processed in any way, I'll be happy to eat it. It's fine.
Yeah.
But if you, in front of me, if you took a banana, sliced it, and said, there you go, put that in your mouth, I would struggle. Like, when I used to, obviously you can't tell now, but I used to work out a lot before. And, you know, having that, you know, the customary banana after training in the changing room, you're there, and everyone would just sit there and just stare at me, because I'd have my bottle of water, I'd have the banana, and just, I'd like, throw it in and just, you know, the chunks, and just knock it back with water. Tears coming out my eyes. Because,
oh my gosh.
That's how difficult it was. But if you gave me a banana smoothie, I wouldn't have one problem.
How did you get around that then? That's an odd one to get around.
You just, I guess it's that thing, you just train yourself, like, and it is irrational. There's no rational reason why that should be the case. But, you know, it's understanding that. So I know there's certain ways, like, say, for example, you know, I've just learned to cope with it, but it's something that's always been different. So to this day, I still have, like, struggled with it. Certain fruits I just can't stand. Mm. Like, overripe mangoes I can't stand because it's just so squelchy. But then the mango puree I work with all day, so I don't know.
Oh, so, wow.
But, you know, I've got over it because I had to, you know.
Yeah. Well, you had, you know, to what did you do for your Michelin starred baby food? Because that's mush, right? What did you create out of curiosity?
Yeah, that was mush. Actually, so I cheated a little bit. This was 2019, so about 14 years ago, so I can be forgiven. I just threw a load of sugar in everything, and the kid loved it. So that's how I wanted. I remember one of the things I did do. You know that like yogurt dessert, you know, shirkan.
Yeah.
So I did that with mango and berries, and I did that with some chocolate and stuff. So I remember that's one of the ones that I did. So there's enough sugar in that for the kid to love, so I won that. I think I did something with vermicelli and almost like a play on like oats, but, you know, with that spiced milk.
Okay.
So like that, but then, you know, like vermicelli, granola, that sort of thing. And then, right, the fruits that went to that were more dehydrated fruits.
Okay, so, no mushed up fruits.
So, I can't remember what the third thing was. I think the third thing was something with eggs. I can't remember, but yeah, I remember those two things. But yeah.
The one thing that I've just realized I didn't ask you about is your Michelin star moment. So I ask everybody, you know, the moment they found out that they had a Michelin star and how they felt about it. Can we end on that? Because that's something Michelin is quite an important thing for me. How do you feel about Michelin? And tell me about the moment.
Well, Michelin's been part of most of my career. It's something that I've always been aware of, and secretly in your heart, you know, you've desired to be part of that. Mm. And I've always had a lot of friends who have been star chefs, and you sort of, you know, they're the rock stars of our industry, right? And that's basically how I used to look at it. And it is something that I've always, I guess, consciously worked towards, but I've always, you know, when people say, oh, did you go for the star? The response is not, no one goes for a star. You just do what you naturally want to do. And then Michelin, if they feel you're worthy, or you know, your cooking's of that caliber, then they'll bestow a star upon you. You can't manufacture one. That's the thing. So for me, when I opened the theme, and obviously every part of my being and my team, you know, everyone, you know, we'd hope that one day we'd achieve it. And you know, and then obviously it happened, and we got the email, and then who did I call? I called Nigel Howard, and I said, look, Nigel, I've got this email. What do you think? And it's like, well, that's just go enjoy the event. And until they call you up on stage, just enjoy it, that's all. And I spoke to Paul Foster as well. And he was a bit more excited. He's like, no, it's happened. And I shared it with a few members of my team. So Neil, my head chef, you know, he's been with me for so long. And he's not just my head chef, he's my friend. And it's family to me. And we were around the back, and I showed him the email. I never said anything. And then he started crying, and I started crying. And then we had a big hug. And then we had to clean up our eyes and, you know, compose ourselves. And then we walked back in the kitchen, because we didn't want to ruin the surprise for anyone else on the team. So, we didn't obviously want them to know we've been crying around the back. But no, it's incredible feeling. But it's the same as every year, you know. I don't believe in the retaining. The way I look at it is, I say to the guy, it's like you've won the star again, because you're winning it every year. Mm. You're assessed every year, and you've got to, in order to maintain it, you've got to win it again. So you've got to have that same, you know, every day you've got to have that same, you know, fire like you have when you go to achieve your first one. And that's how every day has to be. Can't just rest on it. And that's why I always say to the guys, we've not retained, we've won it again. And next year we're going to work just as hard to win it again. And that's how it's going to be. Never take anything for granted.
And your dad must be incredibly proud of your achievements.
Yeah, I think, you know, he is. I think, you know, for my mum and dad, you know, for the... I think it took about 20 years of me doing what I'm doing for them to realize, you know what, it's going to be okay. Because I'm the only one in my industry, in my family, in my industry now. I don't know, my father does it as a hobby. So everyone else has got, you know, respectable jobs.
And well, you're out of five brothers, right?
Yeah. So I'm number two. And
else went into hospitality?
No. So they're all in, like I say, desk jobs doing... what weird and wonderful things, you know, not necessarily all in this country either.
Yeah.
And here I am, you know, and it took a... I remember having the conversation with my dad, and like, you know, and my mum as well. So, you know, you've made a go of it, you know, fair play. You know? But, you know, it did take me at opening, I don't know, about 8 or 9 restaurants, and God knows what else, you know, winning the F-word, winning GBM and all of that before they realise, yeah, it's going to be okay. I guess parents always worry for their kids, don't they? And then, you know, who, let's be honest, the negative connotations with our industry, you know, these people live through it, so they don't fully understand how things have changed now and how, you know, work-life balance is very much more part of what we do. Yeah, we still work hard. But let's be honest, you know, we're a 4-day week, and that's quite common now. Mm. So that balance is been, and then, you know, I'd say, you know, in our industry, it's a good place to work now. you know, all those things that you hear, they're
youth
almost
in the kitchen
off.
Are kind of, yeah, it's not happening as much anymore. I wouldn't say it's completely you know, cleared up, but it I think it's there's progress.
But one thing that pisses me off about that whole thing though is the fact that it's not just our industry isn't the only industry where bullying happens in the workplace or anything else. You know, it happens in every workplace. It happens in any environment where people are. We need to talk about that as a wider aspect of our society, not just something that's honed in at our industry.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I've always believed. So, with my parents, you know, they've got their understanding of what hospitality and what life in hospitality is like. And I think, you know, it took him a long time to realize that, you know, he's a master of his own destiny now, and he seems to be doing all right, you know. And you know, I guess I am.
Yeah, but, you're doing all right. And when you visited London recently, you were here last week, where is your favorite place to dine?
Oh God, I think my new favorite is Bibi. I really enjoyed eating there. It was lovely. That was really nice. And then obviously Ledbury's incredible. Absolutely love that. I tell you what, one place, and it's a lot, especially amongst us chefs, is you know, Kiln in Soho.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. I actually
haven't been there yet, but I have heard lots of good things about it.
You know what? Incredible. Every time we go there, we'll order the entire menu. And then the last time we went, the guy said, are you sure? Because they'd increased their portion. They've started having slightly bigger plates. So obviously I got cocky and was like, yeah, of course I'm sure. We'll do it all the time. And then halfway through, I had to throw it out. But still coming. And I had my ops director, Andrew, with me. And he rolled up his sleeves and he thought, you know what, chef? We'll give it a good go. And he just sat there, and I was picking little bits because I honestly couldn't eat anymore. But because I'd given the big bullshit fucking, yeah, of course I can do it.
Well, you like your variety. I know that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I can't just have one thing. So one of the things, like, for me when I eat, especially, you know, obviously that's why tasting menus are fantastic for me, because I think that's just my
favorite
way of it. Yeah, because, you know, variety is, you know, life is, you know, the beauty of life is variety, and I think you should be able to experience that in most aspects of life. And so when you go to Kiln and you see so many beautiful things, you know, it reads so well, the smells are incredible, you just almost feel bad not ordering some stuff. That's why you just order the whole thing. But I honestly absolutely love that place. Gareth Ward was there some months back, you know, Brad Carter from Birmingham, he loved all my mates who are in the trade. Absolutely love that place.
Speaking of Gareth Ward, have you been to Yenisher?
No, but I was talking to Gareth this Sunday, because obviously it's in Wales and it's just a bit of a trek out there. So I need to invest a couple of days. And as you know, it's hard to get time. Because I was actually supposed to be in London yesterday, but because of work and stuff, I had to pull out of that. Because, you know, Alex Webb from MasterChef, who won it the year I was a mentor on there. He started his residency yesterday at the Intercontinental. Okay. And I was supposed to go there, and I'd love to have been there to support him, but sadly, because of staffing issues, I wasn't able to get out. But yeah, Gareth, I want to go.
Absolutely.
He did a pop-up tournament.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He did, yeah, just quite a few years back, and that's when we first met. And, you know, I fell in love with his food back then, and we became great mates, you know, since then. And like I say, he was here, he was actually in Paul Pereira on Sunday, gone. And, you know, we keep talking, like, when are you going to come? I was like, I promise I will, but I do want to go, for sure.
Definitely worth 100% worth a visit. It's fabulous.
I tell you, other places, not just necessarily London, but like Moor Hall, I had an incredible, but, you know, it goes without saying, core. I had my best meal in the country at Core to date. Yeah, absolutely love everything about it, especially the bread was incredible. Then you've got Moore Hall, which is obviously great. Tom Barnes, I had a catch up with him from Long Clune, which is another restaurant I keep promising that I'll come, but I haven't. So those are places that you know, I love. Lisa Allen, Northcote. I love Northcote. I've spent a lot of time there over the years. And Kenny Atkinson, from Newcastle. He did GBM a few years back, and once again, another lovely, beautiful human being, a lovely guy. And his wife, Abby, as well. But yeah, he's got a one-star restaurant there. Had an incredible meal there a few years back. And once again, it's another restaurant I keep saying I will go back to. But I wish everyone would just open up in Birmingham.
We wish you'd just open in London.
Well, if London sort of moved closer to Birmingham...
Should we engineer that?
Yeah, somehow. Well, we've got HS2 coming soon, haven't we, apparently?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, exactly. Shorter times, travelling times.
Exactly. No, I could stomach 45 minutes. I think I could do it on the train.
Easily done. And you've got a four-day week, actually. What is your excuse now?
I know, but it's like, you know, we've got Paul Breer. So, Ophim closes on Saturday, but Paul Breer stays open until Sunday.
Okay.
And then obviously you've got office day, Monday.
Okay.
And then you've got the unit on Tuesday. And Wednesday you're back at work at Ophim.
So really you don't actually have a day off. You're still working. It's just in other parts of the business. But, you know, as a business owner, that's just the way it is, right?
Yeah, it's the nature of things. And,
yeah,
you know, I guess you train your mind into thinking, well, you know, the 4 days at Ophim, that's work, and everything else sort of isn't. Otherwise, you'd go mad, wouldn't you? Yourself, I've got my life, I've got nothing. But, you know, and it's really nice, you know, the people in my life almost fit around that, which, you know, I know it sounds selfish, but alas, they understand that, you know, certain things I have no choice in. And I'm so thankful for my friends and family for being so flexible around me. Seriously, I'm so thankful about it. But that's the only way I could ever get by.
Yeah, well, the support system is so important for people like you in the industry, because you do need it. You need everyone to be understanding about the working hours and the time and how taxing I think everything is.
Yeah, and, you know, I know they use the term unsociable hours, but it's not unsociable. It's just another way of life, and you've got to find a way where your way of life and, you know, other parts of society find a middle ground. And, you know, where there's a will, there's always a way. But sadly, our industry always will be an evening trade industry. That's when people go out, eat and drink, you know. Yeah. And you've got to move away from thinking about that as being a negative and just find ways of living with that.
Yeah, 100%. And I know it well. My dad was a hotelier, so I know that way of life pretty well. And it's not easy. But Akhtar, on that note, it has been such a pleasure chatting with you and getting to know you better. It's been 2.5 hours. Where did that time just go? Yeah, exactly. This has been absolutely brilliant. I'm so glad that you gave me your time. And if you guys enjoyed today's interview, please rate, review, and subscribe. And Akhtar, you're on Instagram, right? At @AkhtarIslam_. And that's your new account. I can't believe that your old one got hacked into. What a horrible thing to happen.
No, it was such a shocker. I don't know. While it was happening, I was watching it happen. And it was bizarre, actually. And that's when you realize how important something like that, an Instagram account is. You know, it's so weird, but thankfully obviously you were there to help me through that as well, so I really appreciate your support. But yeah, thankfully I've just moved on, really. But yeah, it's such a shocker.
Horrible. And it was really, really weird, actually, because the way I found that account, you know, Instagram sends you these you know, the accounts that you most interact with and the accounts that you least interacted with. So every now and then I look into who have I least interacted with You know, just to kind of, you know, keep myself on top of things. And so I saw this name and I didn't recognize it at all. So I went onto the page and I didn't see anything there. And I thought, this is weird, because I wouldn't follow a page that has nothing there. And then I went on the other side and saw all of your pictures. And I was like, boom, this is it. This is Akhtar's page. But
yeah, it was nuts. It's like, I mean, it's annoying, but like it's mental. I think how little support you get from Instagram, as in like zero support. There's no way to contact them or actually get into any dialogue with them, which I think is something that they really need to look at, because they're happy to take your money. You know, as a, you know, obviously as content producers, you add to their platform. And then, you know, people like me and my businesses, we obviously pay to be on that platform. So they're happy to take your money, but when you need some support, there's actually no one to contact.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
I know, it's shocking. I think that you have to know someone in Instagram, because it's happened to someone else I know, and they said that they got out of it by knowing somebody.
Oh, amazing. Well, I've got to start making friends at Instagram.
I know. Yeah. Stop making friends at GBM. Stop making friends in Instagram.
God, but yeah, so I don't know. But yeah, fingers crossed. I hope that, you know, they realize how important it is to people's lives and their businesses. They actually start bringing out a support structure where, you know, it doesn't involve you having mates in the business.
You know, some people's businesses depend on Instagram now, right? They just can't get by without it.
You know, Actor at Home was basically built on Instagram, so you know how important it is.
Yeah.
So, and you know, that obviously has created jobs and support structure for 26 families, and that's off that Instagram. That's why I was so upset at the time. Because, you know, that Instagram account really helped launch that and supported that. So, but, you know, thankfully, you know, it's slowly starting to build up again. And, you know, and hopefully it's got rid of the good thing. It's got rid of some of my my murky past. So there's some dodgy pictures on the old one. I've had some terrible haircuts over the years. So it's all good. I mean, basically had an emo thing going on. I'm not an emo, nothing wrong with that way of life, but I'm not. But yeah, it definitely had a very emo inspired look.
That's so funny. You know, you had those pictures to put up there in the first place, so they're still around. You never know. You could always just put them back up. This is what I used to be like.
I'll go back and delete. Yeah. They're never resurfacing again. Never resurfacing again. But yeah, you know. We obviously set up a new one, and here we are. And then you move on with life, but
yeah. Well, that's the beauty of it. It's you can just set up a new one and just start again.
Bounce back, exactly.
Akhtar, what a pleasure chatting with you. Thank you so much, and hopefully I will see you soon. I would love to visit Ofim. So when I'm next, I wouldn't plan to come to Birmingham, but I would plan to come just to visit Ofim.
Well, I'm flattered. Thank you very much. And you know, you're always welcome.